Within the last few days, the United States has experienced 3 mass shootings, adding to a death toll of 69 people who have passed away from mass shootings just in the first few weeks of 2023. And mass shootings are just part of the story. Firearm fatality rates have gone up in recent years after a low point in 2004. But who is affected most by gun homicides and suicides? Our next guest is a co-author of a new study in JAMA Network Open looking at firearm fatality trends and disparities. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about longer-term trends in gun fatalities? Are there changes you'd like to see in policy, in our culture? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Dr. Eric Fliegler is a doctor in the Division of Emergency Medicine and Director of Sedation Service at Boston Children's Hospital. He's an Associate Professor of Pediatrics and Emergency Medicine at Harvard Medical School. Dr. Fliegler, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Before we get to the study and this longer-term view, I just wanted to get your thoughts on this recent wave of high-profile tragic shootings, especially the ones in California we're seeing in the news today.
I think mass shootings are one of these totally shocking events that it doesn't matter how many times they have. Each time it's just a gut blow thinking about them. I think that these mass shootings, we're almost kind of getting used to them happening and being more and more horrific. When I was growing up, it was the Columbine shooting, which was really the first one that got my attention. And, you know, the last few years, we just continue to see worse ones. And what is very clear is that there are no people who are safe from a mass shooting, and that they can happen really pretty much anywhere. And their randomness is part of what is so terrifying.
Now, looking at this newly published study, you're going back to 1990 here. What were you and your co-authors of this piece trying to figure out in this long view on gun fatalities?
So the stories and trying to understand what is actually happening with gun fatalities over time and how do you kind of like think about them? A lot of our article was not just about crunching the numbers, but trying to think about visually, how do we understand this and what's going on in terms of disparity? So let me kind of paint a picture for you. Mm-hmm. So we looked at 32 years of data from 1990 to 2021. And during this time period, there were over 1.1 million people who were killed by guns. How do you even conceptualize that? That's more people than have died in any of the wars that America has fought in. That is more people that have died from the COVID pandemic in the United States. And when we think about things like both war as well as the COVID pandemic, we think about all of the resources and money that has gone into trying to either fight a war or to stop the COVID pandemic. And yet virtually none of those types of resources, not even by many thousands of orders of magnitude, have been put into trying to stop gun violence from occurring in our country. The second thing that we saw was that there's just been a tremendous increase in fatalities over time. So when I started doing research in firearms, and I've been doing this research for about 12 years, the numbers have been very consistent. About 30,000 people in our country were dying every year, which is a lot of people dying from gun violence. There are no parallels really in almost anywhere in the world to that. But over the last few years, we've seen these numbers start to go up, and then they really started to accelerate around the time of the pandemic. So that by 2021, whereas we'd been 30,000 fatalities only about 6-7 years ago, by 2021, we're at 48,000 people who had died either by firearm homicide, firearm suicide, or firearm unintentional fatalities. And in the last 2 years alone, that represented a 45% increase in firearm homicides and a 10% increase in firearm suicides.
Your starting point is 1990, and that's when this, I think there were higher rates of shooting in the 1980s, 1990, then they start to go down till that low point you mentioned in 2004. How do we compare now to that 80s into 1990 level of gun fatalities?
So in terms of the actual number of people who are dying, we have more people who died in 2021 from guns than ever before. In terms of a rate, because our population was smaller then, the numbers were slightly higher at the end of the 80s and early 90s from where we are now. But on the trend that we're at, we are soon going to eclipse that probably within a year or two if things do not improve.
Talking to Dr. Eric Fliegler. He's co-author of a new study looking at gun fatalities in the United States from 1990 until 2021. Some of the most recent data, and as you heard there, increases just in the last few years, substantial ones. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your questions, your solutions. Email ideas at WPR.org or call 800-642-1234. Dr. Fliegler, the damage doesn't hit all communities equally. When we look at gun homicide fatalities, first of all, who's most disproportionately affected there?
The numbers, when we look at who dies by guns for when it comes to homicides, are incredibly striking. When we look at populations concerning race and ethnicity, it is young Black males who are dying by far at the highest rates. Just to kind of put a number on it, by 2021, they were close to 140 fatalities per 100,000 people, whereas when you look at white males, it was closer to 6 per 100,000. Just to kind of quantify that, that means Black young males are dying at a rate 24 times that of white males. When you look at American Indian, Alaska Native, as well as Hispanic males, they're about 3.5 times that rate of their similar age white males. To put those numbers in context, when we think about disparities or health inequities between people by races, you know, when we talk about a 20% interest, 20% greater rate, or a 50%, these are big numbers. If something is 2 times greater, those are huge numbers. When you're talking about 24 times the rate for Black males, those are numbers that virtually defy imagination and are not replicated anywhere else in healthcare disparities that I'm aware of. So these are really big numbers. When we look at firearm suicides, we see a slightly different demographic. Firearm suicides, older white males have the highest rate, especially above the age of 75. But we see that these numbers continue to increase. There are high rates of firearm suicide, especially in the American Indian community. And then we see that, again, as you said before, the numbers are going up for everybody. And the group that we're actually seeing the highest rate of increase is actually in Black females. And so while there are certain groups that certainly have higher levels and with homicides, it's really almost mind-boggling to think about, everybody's still being affected.
I think that the highest profile news stories are the mass shooting homicides. Those aren't the most common, I think, gun homicide, and we often leave gun suicides out of the equation. Can you talk a little bit about how, when we're talking about gun fatalities, how much of that is suicide, how much of that is homicide?
This is such an important point, and thank you. So I mentioned 48,000 people, more than 48,000 people died by firearms in 2021. Roughly 60% of those fatalities are suicides, and about 40% are homicides. So if you really want to think where the majority are, it's in the suicides. And it's an important thing to keep in mind. And a lot of times people will say, well, you know, people who want to kill themselves are going to kill themselves, so we should just ignore that data. And actually, the exact opposite is true. What we know is that, you know, when people reach that moment of despair in their life that they decide to try to take their own lives, how they do this makes an enormous difference on whether they actually die or survive. So if you have a gun available, and most people who try to kill themselves by suicide will try within 24 hours, if a gun is available to you, you are almost always going to die. It's about 91% of the time. However, if you use pills, and pills are what are used in 85% of the times when people try to commit suicide because that's what's available, only 3% die. So that's a really incredible thing to think about, which means, you know, what's going on here? And there's many reasons. The first is that when you have an overdose, you have time. You have time to have regret. You have time to send that email, make a phone call, reach out to somebody. Your body can reject those pills. And if you get to the emergency room, we can almost always save you. But if you use a gun, there is zero opportunity for regret. Furthermore, if you can get through that terrible moment in your life where you have tried to die by suicide, but you survive, the likelihood over the rest of your life that you will die by suicide is under 10%. So we need to get people through, and that's a big deal. With regards to the homicides, you know, as I said, it's about 40% of these fatalities are homicides. The vast majority are not mass killings. Mass killings get attention. Mass killings are horrible, tragic, and they just they just kind of shred you on the inside when you think about it. But most of the killings, the over, you know, the close to 20,000 people who will die in a homicide, most of those are one-on-one type of things. With women, it's frequently associated with domestic violence, being killed by a husband or a boyfriend or a partner. And then the other people are dying, you know, it's a range of things, from certainly a small percentage of them are the burglar type of thing, but the majority of them are, a significant portion are between people who've known one another and leading to these fatalities.
I'll give another number in addition to our call-in number. The Suicide and Crisis Hotline, it is now a three-digit number, 988. If you or someone you know is at risk, you think, of suicide right now, 988 is that number. We just talked about that on the show yesterday. We're talking to pediatric physician Dr. Eric Fliegler, author of a study that looks at firearm fatality trends and disparities in the United States over the last 20 years. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the increase in firearm fatalities? What do you think may be causing it? What questions do you have for our guest about his research? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up our conversation with Dr. Eric Fliegler, doctor in the Division of Emergency Medicine and director of Sedation Service at Boston Children's Hospital, looking at a research study that he co-authored looking at firearm fatality trends and disparities from 1990 to 2021. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on the recent increase in firearm fatalities over the last few years. What do you think might be driving that? What solutions would you like to see at least tried? Call it at 800-642-1234. We'll go to your calls now. Rick is with us in Monona. Rick, hi.
Hi. This is a real hot button issue with me. I think that this is the most outrageous failure of our government and legislators to legislate and stop this gun violence. People keep throwing up the Second Amendment. I was thinking or comparing it to, if we were to have airplane crashes three times a week or four times a week, you can bet the government and the legislators would be on fire to do something about this. I think that this is a shameful thing that the country has going for it. And the only way I can see it stopping is if they actually get some spine in Congress and actually do something that's meaningful to stop the spread of guns, especially these high capacity and these automatic rifles like the AR-15.
Rick, thanks for that call. The semi-automatic rifles in the civilian version, but point taken. Dr. Fliegler, I don't know if you want to weigh in on the policy and politics, but do you have thoughts on what Rick had to say?
Yeah, I think this is very important, and I think his social math about the airplanes is right on target with regards to kind of how to think about the severity of the problem. So the role of legislation and regulation is really important to think about with firearms. It's a very complicated topic. It's an area I've been studying for a decade, and many people who are in this work look at. There are certainly some laws that seem to have a pretty impressive ability to decrease fatalities. Those include laws around child access prevention, which is about gun storage and preventing kids from getting a hold of them, can decrease fatalities. Laws around domestic violence and who can own a gun if they have a domestic violence misdemeanor or restraining order is important. Background checks are important. And we are fortunate that for the first time in 24 years, we actually passed our first federal firearm legislation this past summer, the Bipartisan Safety Act, which did put some things forward. But it's not going to solve all of those issues, and we do need to think about it bigger. Another area which is very frequently missed by people is this very, it's almost bizarre to think about it. Firearms are the only item that are sold to people, sold on the consumer market, that are not regulated for safety. Let me be clear. You buy a teddy bear for your child, it is regulated whether it is flammable, how nice, how well the buttons are sewed on so it's not a choking hazard, what about the ribbon around its neck? Yet guns are 100% exempt from safety regulations, which is why a 2-, 3-, and 4-year-old can pick up a gun and pull the trigger and kill themselves or somebody else. It's the reason why people can take your gun and use it against you, because there's nothing that registers who is the person who owns the gun. These are technologies that exist, but until we decide to regulate guns for safety, we're not making any movement here.
Thanks for the call, Rick. Tim is with us now in Hollandale. Tim, hi.
Hi. In the past, we've never had a problem with guns as far as school shootings and whatnot. People say guns are weapons of war. Weapons of war, guns have been in people's hunting deer closets since as long as I'm 56, from when I was a kid. I took my gun to school for English class. We didn't have these problems back then because we had a parent at home. There was at least one parent at home to help raise kids for the most part. Our schools actually had after-school programs that included everybody. You know, there wasn't this big push, and then there wasn't social media where all these people get together with all these stupid ideas, and one guy gets the bright idea to go out and show everybody how it's done.
Tim, thanks for the call, Dr. Flieger, to make the case that it isn't so much the guns that have changed, it's us and how we raise our kids.
You know, I think it's a very thoughtful point. I think what we have to recognize is we have to deal with the society with which we are living in right now. And in that context, when we talk about so many people dying, we need to think about, you know, what are the multiple approaches that we can use to try to reduce gun violence and people dying. We do know that gun ownership rates are starting to climb somewhat, and that is certainly going to affect fatalities. We know when we look across states, the states that have the most guns are always the states that have the highest rates of firearm fatalities. But he's right. You know, many people do own guns, and they will be safe, and their families will be safe. But we have to think about this contextually, what's going on across our country, and how do we reduce these fatalities?
Thanks a lot for that call. Dr. Flieger, I want to talk to you about what you're hoping people will do with your research. I think of a famous early public health study, a map that showed, hey, this part of, I think it was London, this is where the cholera is happening. So maybe that's where we need to try to solve the problem. Are you hoping that your maps and your social maps of the impact of gun fatalities help us deal with these problems?
Yeah, John Snow, the father of epidemiology, understanding the geography, his famous pump handle is important in understanding cholera. Listen, we can't tackle a problem if we don't know where it's occurring. We can't tackle a problem if we don't know who is affected by it. And so the purpose of our study is to do precisely that, to start to narrow in where are the areas where this occurs, who are the populations that are at highest risk. We have done earlier work looking at concentrated poverty in communities that have really high rates of poverty, 20% or more dying, 20% or more of the population with incomes under the poverty level. We see fatality rates 3- and 4-fold higher than areas that have very little poverty. That's one part of the solution. Knowing where the households are, where people are dying, is another part. Knowing how guns are stored and trying to change people's thought process about, you know, do you give access to your kids to guns, or do we need to make sure they're locked up so they don't have access and bring them to school and cause harm?
Is there, I'm guessing from what you're saying, there's not a one-size-fits-all approach to gun fatalities. I'll put that into quotes. There might be one solution for those 70 to 74-year-old white males at risk of gun suicide, a different one for, the list goes on and on.
That's correct. As long as, you know, we're in a society where best estimates say there are at close to 400 million guns in our country, more than one gun for every person who lives here. And those are just estimates. When we're going to have that many guns in our society, we have to think about this as the complex problem that it is and work on a myriad of solutions. The military has worked for years on decreasing firearm suicides among their veterans, and they have different programs for them. We know that the approaches to helping prevent fatalities among children, and it should be noted that guns have become the number one killer of kids between the age of 1 and 24 in our country. That's just a hard number to grapple with. But, you know, if you are a teenage boy and you die in our country, 28% of the teenage boys who die in our country die because of a gun. We need to think about solutions that work on them. And as you said, the list goes on.
Do you feel a sense of urgency? As you said right when we began, the number of firearm fatalities has gone up a significant amount over the last couple few years. Do you see it being taken seriously?
I think that people take the idea of being killed or harmed by a gun seriously. The question is, what do they do about that? Do I take it seriously? I take it very seriously. And you know, it should be noted, when you're talking 48,000 people dying in 2021, there were probably at least three times that number, probably close to 150,000 people who are injured and then end up with potentially lifetime injuries. The way communities and families are affected, virtually everybody will end up knowing somebody who is affected by gun violence. This must be addressed. We must, as a society, kind of recognize that this problem is terrible, that it is growing, and it doesn't need to be like this.
Dr. Fliegler, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
That's Dr. Eric Fliegler with Boston Children's Hospital and Harvard Medical School. He's a co-author of a recent study on firearms fatalities in the U.S., looking at trends and disparities going back over the last two decades. If you or someone you know, again, is at risk of suicide, you can contact the Suicide Prevention Hotline at 988. They have a call. You can chat. You can text as well.